It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Last month, Atlanta became the first city in Georgia to adopt inclusionary zoning ordinances. Basically, they require developers to reserve housing for low-income Atlantans around the Beltline and around Mercedes-Benz Stadium. With me to talk about what this means is Sasan Namat-Bakhsh, an attorney at Namat Law Firm and former Atlanta Beltline Housing Policy and Development Fellow. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And also by Skype, we have James Kunstler, author of The Geography of Nowhere. Hi there, James.
Hi there.
James, when we use the word gentrification, which is basically what we're talking about here, aren't we just talking about supply and demand, right? People want to live near the Beltline. That means that people who either develop, build units or own units there can charge more for them. Isn't that sort of the natural way of things?
Well, the natural way of things is to build market housing, and over time, the luxury housing of yesterday becomes the affordable housing of today. Now, unfortunately, we made some very bad choices in past decades, and we did not build the type of buildings that had the kinds of housing that would age and become more affordable. And now we're stuck in a dilemma. It's pretty incredible how many problems human beings can create for themselves.
I think that comment could probably work in reference to a lot of different topics. But Sasan, how do you keep units affordable in a place that is high demand?
So I think that's a very tough question to answer, because having to answer that, you have to look at the markets of real estate, supply and demand, construction cost, and how development revenues can outweigh those construction costs. And the matter that we have on hand, unfortunately, with the shortage of affordable housing, goes hand in hand with the problems that come in when developers can't meet the expectations of that they actually have responsibilities that they have to make on their end. So that is a problem that we have. But, you know, I like to also emphasize that this is stuck in a dilemma that, as James put it, these are decades of regulations that have tried to disconnect neighborhoods and engineering to set them off from one another, and now they're being connected. So it's one of those market forces that is taking place.
So you see these new zoning ordinances as progress?
I personally see them as a progress, but I don't see them as a silver bullet. I also need people to understand that the development community is a community that wakes up at before the dawn, they beat the clock and get on to work with very tough conditions, and the markets change, interest rates change. So they don't really have a playbook to play by. But regulations like this have worked in other ordinances and jurisdictions, especially with integration of socioeconomics and with making more units affordable. So I see it as a small step in the right direction.
You know, James, in the past, ordinances have not worked. And by that I say that's sometimes how cities have ended up with low-quality, low-income housing that became sort of a blight on a community. How do you avoid that?
Well, we do a lot of stupid things in this country. And one of the stupid laws that we've been passing all over the country for decades is a set of laws against accessory apartments or mother-in-law apartments or garage apartments. And these are some of the most common and best kinds of affordable housing, and we basically outlaw them all over the country. Also, for about the last 75 years, we've been building one-story strip malls instead of real, you know, urban buildings and urban centers that have apartments over the stores. So that kind of affordable housing is gone. We've created a gigantic problem, which we're now trying to fix by giving people an artificial commodity that we call affordable housing.
Do you think zoning ordinances of the kind that Atlanta just passed work?
Well, they're formulas to try to work around the pre-existing problems that we've already created, many of them in law. And, I think that there'll be a lot of unanticipated consequences to them.
So let me play this comment from a community organizer in Peoplestown. This is Allison Johnson. When we talked to her about gentrification in her neighborhood, this is what she said.
because people who have been in these communities deserve to stay in these communities. They live, work, worship, play in these communities and have been for years. They've been screaming for economic development, for equitable, affordable housing in these communities for decades. And it's not okay when people come in and just decide this is where they want to reside.
So, Sasan, how do you make the case? How do you make the case that we need to include low-income housing to a city that would say, look, if we sell more luxury apartments, that's higher tax revenues for the city?
Correct. So I think looking at some of the other jurisdictions where IZ has worked and is going on.
IZ?
As known as inclusion zoning. It has positives and negatives. It can't be said that everything about it would be positive and potentially has negative impacts, meaning it may actually lead to higher prices of those market rate units. It may lead to actual shortage of market rate units. So it might actually have a negative impact on the supply and demand of it. But we need integration in terms of folks being able to communicate with each other in their own communities and share experiences. And I think IZ can give that sort of dynamic or at least help with it.
So, James, let me play you this comment from Ryan Gravel, who was the visionary behind the idea of the Beltline. And he says he doesn't like to use the word gentrification.
This is happening everywhere. Every city across the country, the Beltline may shape the geography of where those pressures are happening in Atlanta. It may shape the amplification of it in some locations. And, you know, the answer is not to not improve communities. The answer is not to not build trails and parks and grocery stores and attract jobs. That's not the answer, to hold communities down just to keep them affordable.
What do you make of that particular argument that it's not about not going into low-income areas and improving them?
Well, that I don't think that's the point he's making. He's making the point that gentrification is necessary and really unavoidable if you want to have a city as a living organism that grows over time. You know, the welfare, the well-being of the city has to be the responsibility of all classes of people, not just the poor, not just the middle class, but also people who are well off. There's this kind of peevish wish to try to exclude them from being in the city. And, you know, the consequence of that is that you will have a city only for the relatively poor. So I think that guy is absolutely right.
So then, but, you know, look, the fact of the matter is that often people vote with their feet, right? Oftentimes, people who have the means don't like to live in communities that are in close proximity to low-income housing. And that can become a problem, too.
There are a lot of ways of dealing with these problems. One of them is to understand that it's not a good idea to concentrate poverty in government subsidized housing. You have to be very careful about concentrating it, because then you start to concentrate bad behavior. And that's exactly what drives people away from the cities. I think that a city like Atlanta would be well served if they got in touch with some practitioners from the new urbanist movement who understand how to integrate housing for all income groups in relatively dense projects. I don't quite understand why you haven't availed yourself of that knowledge.
We only have about less than a minute left, but Sasan, but what do you want to answer that question, why we haven't availed ourselves of that knowledge?
I think that's a great question, but a more pressing question that I would like to answer in this last segment would be, Atlanta Beltline is the most comprehensive revitalization effort ever undertaken in the city of Atlanta. The size of it is 22 miles of a corridor, has trail system, the future plans of it have transportation system, it's integrating communities that have been detached from one another, adding to lifestyle, and we can't expect it to be all perfect, so it would have negative consequences.
Yeah.
And, at the end of the day, though, it adds diversity and walkability to our city, so I'm excited to see what will happen with it.
That is Sasan Nemat-Bakhsh, attorney at Nemat Law Firm and former Atlanta Beltline Housing Policy and Development Fellow. And you also heard from James Kunstler, author of many books, including The Geography of Nowhere. Thanks so much to both of you.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here as well.